Chapter 59, Yasna 13. "How long until it hits?" Yasna asked worriedly, looking up at the darkening sky. Taln shook his head.
2 hours, maybe a bit more."
Yasna nodded. The searing was over. High storms would fall again. She shivered slightly. The Rimac Highlands weren't as cold as those of Prelir, but she did not look forward to the soggy chill of high storm rains, not to mention the fury of its winds. This storm wouldn't be anything like the bellow, but on the highlands in the middle of summer, it would be bad enough. "I'm almost sad to see them start again," Yasna said.
"I'm not," Taln said. "I'm amazed we're not dying of thirst as it is, considering that."
He waved his hand toward their growing army. Despite its ragged and disjointed nature, Yasna had to smile at the size of the force. Several larger mercenary companies had tracked them down, and that addition, mixed with the increasing numbers of refugees, put their force at nearly 800 strong. Admittedly, that number contained many who had barely a week's worth of training beneath Taln's tutelage. Still, they were of hardy Rimac stock, well acquainted with fighting and their weapons, even if they didn't have formalized knowledge of formations or battlefield tactics. It was a varied group, mercenaries mixed with farmers, herald believers with men who just wanted the thrill of battle. But Taln was quickly working to change that, making them into a cohesive force. What had begun as a refugee band had become a fighting force of significant size. Now, if she could just get them to her brother in time. The army continued to maintain a good speed, despite the increased size. Even if she had stayed with the originally planned group of 7, she doubted they could have been more than a few days ahead. It would be worth the delay to deliver an army instead of just a warning, assuming they arrived while there was still a war to fight, of course. Unconsciously, she glanced toward the east, toward Alethkar.
"Worry less about your homeland," Taln said, "and more about how you're going to feed all these men."
Yasna looked back toward the camp. Some of them had brought their own provisions, but they all obviously expected to be fed for their time. The mercenaries wanted something more substantial than just food, of course, though many of them were desperate enough to accept promises of coin once they reached Alethkar, but before they fought, as long as their stomachs were filled. She had hunting groups gathering what they could from the land, but boiled cromlins were only barely palatable, and rock buds were notoriously foul-tasting. The hunting parties occasionally captured a white spine, or on blessed occasions, a wild pig. However, the highlands weren't good for hunting, and the size of her army was too prohibitive to expect it to live off the land completely. That left. "There," Yasna said, pointing at the returning Kemnar, who was walking with several scouts. "He's announced our presence to the town leaders. We can go to trade now." Taln raised an eyebrow.
"And how much coin do we have left?" he asked.
"Enough," Yasna said. "For a little while, assuming we sell Meridas's fine clothing and jewelry." He had not been happy about that little command and had insisted on keeping at least 2 outfits and a couple of rings. Still, his contributions, along with some more of their dwindling horse funds, should be enough to keep the army fed for another 2 weeks, barely long enough to reach Kolinar if there were no more delays. "Go get dressed," Yasna said. "The city leaders will want to see our herald." Taln's expression darkened.
"We need to talk," he said, not moving.
"Later," Yasna promised. Taln sighed, then nodded, going off to put on the fine cloak and shirt she had appropriated for him from Meridas's stock. Despite tailoring, they didn't quite fit, but the rich colors, mixed with Taln's shard blade, made for a passably impressive presentation. The city was only a short distance away. They had camped the army far enough outside its borders to not be too threatening, but close enough that it would be visible from the wall. Since entering the highlands, the landscape had flattened out, and villages were more rare. Yet the mines to the north, the prime locations of despotism, made certain that caravans passed this way fairly often. So although the towns were less frequent, they tended to be larger, and even more suspicious, if that were possible. Unlike the villages to the south, this city had a wall. The fortification was coated with enough cromstone to make it look almost like a natural growth, and it was topped by a line of suspicious guards. Evening was quickly approaching, and if the impending high storm hadn't darkened the sky, the setting sun would have. It was still possible to make out faces in the dim light, however, and theirs were expressions of rough determination. The message given by soldiers, closed gates, and black walls was clear. This was not a city ruled by an outside tyrant, and nor would it soon be taken. Kemnar led Jasnah, Taln, Meridas, Lan, and their honor guard of 20 soldiers to the front gates. Meridas still looked annoyed that he wasn't allowed to ride at the head of the group. Jasnah allowed herself a smile. During the last week, the center of power within their force had changed yet again. The newcomers came to see a herald, not an unknown nobleman. Before, she had allowed Meridas to command because he represented the best hope for Alethkar. By the same reasoning, she now required Meridas to let Taln take at least a figurehead role at the fore of the army. Ostensibly, Meridas was still the top nobleman in the group, but everyone knew that deities ranked aristocrats.
"Where's the herald?" one of the wall-top soldiers called down.
No one made any moves to open the gates. Taln stepped forward and faced them, holding his shard blade point down at his side. Jasnah wished, not for the first time, that she had been able to persuade him to wear Kemnar's shard plate. Standing between Kemnar and Meridas in their plate, even Taln's rich cloth seemed wan. She knew what they were thinking atop that wall. This? This is the supposed Herald Talanel? This soldier with the height and muscles of a normal man? An indistinctive face and simple bearing? Where is the aura of power, the glowing eyes, the towering height, and booming voice?
"Why have you come to Galavan?" the guard called down. "My man has explained our desires already," Taln yelled back. "Open your gates, so we may trade with your merchants."
There was a pause. Finally, the man called down again.
"We've changed our minds," he said. "We don't want your trade, nor do we need you stealing our soldiers when we have few enough to defend ourselves. Be on your way, false herald. We've seen your kind often enough."
A second later, the man continued, as if in afterthought.
"And don't think to threaten the siege of our city. We've counted your numbers. 800 troops can hardly think to threaten a walled city, especially when those troops are as poorly equipped as yours."
Beside her, Meridas's expression darkened, as if an insult against the troops was also one against him. Jasnah just sighed to herself. It wasn't the first city they'd been turned away from. For every person who seemed willing to accept Taln's claims, there were the more rational thousand who saw through him. Apparently, the tempestuous Remac countryside was no stranger to men claiming heraldship as a means of gathering fame and troops. She turned to go. Taln remained where he was.
"Choose from among yourselves your 5 greatest warriors," he called up to them, "and send them down here." "We already told you," the walltop man said. "You will find no recruits here. No recruiting,
Tom said, jamming his shard blade into a nearby boulder.
Just a challenge. I will fight them all at once, and do so without a weapon. If they defeat me, you may have my blade.
Yasna raised an eyebrow. This part was not expected. Apparently, Tom had decided to improvise. The guard laughed.
You expect me to trust your word?
How often does a town like yours get an opportunity to win itself a shard blade?
Tom called back.
Even if that opportunity is dubious.
This brought pause. Finally, after some debate from those on top, a rope ladder was thrown over the side of the wall, and five spear-wielding men descended and approached Tom, suspicious of a trap. Within 30 heartbeats, all five lay on the ground, groaning to themselves. The guards atop the wall were silent. Tom whipped his blade from its boulder sheath and pointed it at the guards.
You think I need an army to take your city?
He demanded in a loud voice.
Stone and wood are no obstacle to a blade, and I have two other shard bearers at my command. You think we couldn't brush past your fortifications like a storm through a paper glyph ward? You think we three alone couldn't slaughter your entire defensive force? I come not for my good, but for yours. Death comes 1 year from the day of my return. Barely 6 months remain. Forbid me or accept me, I care not, but know this. You are warned.
Silence. Then finally, the gates clunked and crept open. Yasna shot a triumphant, self-congratulatory smile at Meridas. The nobleman had watched Tom's exchange with eager eyes, hoping, she knew, that the madman would overextend himself and fall with a spearhead in his gut. Now, Meridas suffered her subtle mockery with dignity. He had complained against Yasna's insistence that their force become the Herald's army, but he had not disobeyed her. He knew a good opportunity when he saw one. Despite his deceptively mundane appearance, Tom had a momentum about him. Where he strode, rumors sprouted, and where he fought, respect was gained. The city only had one inn, and it was here that Yasna implemented the second part of her well-tested plan. She put Tom on display. She gained him a conference with the city leaders, a group of three merchants who controlled the water in the summer, the shelter during storms, and the walls at all times. She made certain that Tom's discussion with them happened in the common room, with open storm shutters and plenty of curious ears. Tom explained his purpose, telling them of the return and the other nonsense his mind had contrived. However, since he absolutely believed what he said, his words carried weight, despite their ridiculous nature. That honesty, mixed with the display at the gates, was sure to make Galavan one of their more successful city visits. Yasna smiled to herself as she tallied up expected recruits. Smaller cities than this had yielded 10 sets of men. They could probably expect a good 50 soldiers from Galavan itself, and the rumors its people spread would bring even more from outlying communities. She must have appeared too gleeful, for once the conference was finished, the merchants returning to their homes for the night, Tom sought her out to have his talk. He came to her room, one of three gifted by the innkeeper to his prestigious guests, completely unconcerned with etiquette or decency. He barely even paused to knock before he entered. Yasna yelped quietly as he opened the door, jumping up to throw a cloak over her nightgown. Tom shut the door behind him, his face distracted. Only then did he notice Yasna's disheveled blush, and he paused, hand still on the doorknob.
Have you no sense of propriety? She demanded,
flustered as she seated herself back on the stool beside her dressing mirror, pulling her cloak closed at the top to hide the exposed flesh beneath. Bursting into a woman's rooms at night, far past modest hours? Tom stood for a moment, as if stunned by something completely unexpected. Then he blushed deeply and looked away.
I apologize, he said. It has been a very long time since I have had to consider such things.
Yasna snorted. For an immortal deity, you certainly can be remarkably dense sometimes, Taln. He smiled wanly, but didn't make any moves to leave, so she settled herself on the stool as if she were in her audience chamber back in the palace. Behind her, the room's storm shutters rattled from wind and rain. The high storm had finally hit. Back in the camp, the regular men were about to spend a very damp evening. If you don't consider such things, Yasna noted, then I assume this is not a social call. Tal nodded, not bothering to take a seat.
You're using me, he said. I don't like it.
Characteristically blunt. And how exactly is it that I'm using you? She asked. Taln raised an eyebrow.
Don't play at your games, Yasna. I've noticed how Meridas holds back and lets me speak. I realize how you place me at the forefront when we visit these towns, how you encourage me to speak of my purpose and my mission. I know how you send newcomers to gawk at me during training, how you encourage visitors and townspeople to spread the word of the Herald's army.
And? Yasna asked. You have a problem with these things? I thought you wanted to warn the land of its danger. Are you not pleased with the attention you are receiving and the control you have been granted?
By Kevahin, Yasna,
Taln snapped.
This land isn't your court to be flirted and manipulated. We're not dealing with balls and squabblings over ranks. These are people, Yasna, not political prizes. Good people who've lived hard lives, and now you're enlisting them to march to their deaths. You don't care about my cause. You still think I'm insane. You just want an army you can bring back to show off to your traitorous king of a brother.
Yasna stiffened at the attack. I don't see what it matters to you, she said coldly. You get what you desire, a population warned of the return. I get what I need, soldiers to aid my homeland in its defense. Where is the argument? Taln leaned down, looking her in the eyes.
One thing politicians never seem to understand is that intention matters. It matters to these people. It matters to the Almighty. And it matters to me. I will not gather this army under false pretenses. Better they remain here, warned, than they come with me and die in Alethkar, leaving their families undefended.
He stood, his expression dark.
I will not be your puppet any longer. I had hoped we could discuss this, but I should have realized better. You and I can never discuss anything.
He turned, reaching for the doorknob. I'll take you to the Holy City, Yasna said. Taln froze. Outside, the tempestuous high storm raged, but in her room there was only silence. We'll go there, Yasna said. The entire army. Despite the diversion and the wasted time, we'll go. Just like you want. No broken oaths, no abandoned soldiers. Taln stood, hand gripping the knob. Finally he turned.
Must everything be a deal to you, woman?
Yes, Yasna said quietly. Taln stood, staring at her with dark eyes. Oh, sit down, Taln, she said with exasperation. I can barely think with you looming over me like that. He sighed, letting go of the knob. He didn't bother to find a stool. He simply settled himself on the ground, leaning with his back against the door. It's a good offer, Taln, she said. If your brethren are actually there,
gathered in Jorovan, as you claim, then we can deliver them an army trained and ready. These last few months won't have been wasted at all. If they aren't there, then you'll have to reassess your goals. You can hardly face the Stormshades without an army or a center of operations. But with Alethkar stable and free of invaders, and with my promises of aid, you can go about your preparations without further hindrance. Either way, you are better off than if you decided to leave us now and start over in another kingdom. Taln sighed again. He sat for a moment, as if listening to the rain strike stone outside. Finally he spoke.
"Why is it so hard for you to believe that I am who I say that I am?"
"Because I've seen proof to the contrary," Jasnah said. "The sign refusing to work. You have flawless, if accented, use of the Aleth tongue, despite a supposed 1,000 years in absentia. You display an inability to give any display of power, divine or otherwise." Taln shook his head.
"Those aren't your reasons, Jasnah. You may see them as validations, but they aren't the core of your doubt."
"Oh?" Jasnah asked. "And what is?"
"Your disbelief in the Almighty,"
Taln replied simply. Jasnah paused. She hadn't expected him to be right. "I'll admit," she said, "that my skepticism of his existence doesn't exactly encourage me to believe in his divine servants."
"What happened?"
Taln asked.
"What happened that could make you so determined not to believe?"
"Why do people always ask that?" Jasnah demanded. "They act as if there were some catastrophic event in my life that made me reject God, as if I were turning my back on a distasteful bowl of soup. It's not like that, Taln. Nothing happened to me. Why do the other people believe in the Almighty, other than that they've been taught to do so since they were children? What happened to them?"
"Surely there must be reasons," Taln said.
"There are," Jasnah said, "but it's the entire concept. Not just one or two facts, not just a bad experience, that disturbs me about Voronism. The idea that morality is based on some external, all-powerful being makes me uncomfortable. The monks teach that all goodness comes from the Almighty. One of them actually told me that without the Almighty, there is no reason for goodness in men. For the dwelling and eternal consequences provide the only equalizing pressure upon the souls of men. Don't you see how insulting that is? They imply that there can be no inherent good in people, that we depend on fear of retribution to keep us doing what's right. To them, anyone who doesn't agree to their moral superiority is damned."
"I see,"
Taln said quietly. "The Almighty provides an escape," Jasnah continued, "a means of avoiding responsibility. If we do what he supposedly wants, then we don't really have to worry about learning right and wrong for ourselves. By contriving for ourselves an external source of truth, we're left to be carnal and wrong as long as we're striving to remake ourselves, as the arguments teach. It also allows the monks to have an absolute monopoly on morality. They get to decide what is good and what isn't, since they speak for the Almighty. The rest of us have inferior, even defective souls that are in need of their repair."
"I see,"
Taln repeated thoughtfully. Jasnah sat defiantly, preparing her counter-arguments. He would find that no matter what holes he tried to poke, she had plugs long formulated. She'd had countless discussions with Ralmacha and other theologians, and none of them had been able to give any solid defense to her attacks on their religion.
"It must be hard to live not believing in anything,"
Taln said. Jasnah raised an eyebrow at the unexpected path. "I don't find it so hard."
"Don't you?"
Taln asked, sounding genuinely inquisitive.
Your brother betrayed you. The other members of your family are all dead, and you have no god to rely on. What is there left for you?
The words hurt more than she would ever give him the satisfaction of admitting. I have Alethkar, she finally replied, and I will do anything to protect it, Tom. I'll use these people. I'll even exploit you. My kingdom is all I have left.
Intentions, Tom mumbled. That one at least has some merit.
He sighed.
We will go to the Holy City, and I will continue your charade. But assuming you are right, and these people end up fighting for Alethkar, you will care for them. Give them homes inside your kingdom, and send for their families to join them. You will give them a better life than these harsh lands.
Of course, Jasnah answered honestly. Taln rose. Behind her, the winds had grown still. The high storm had passed. Taln nodded once, looking oddly tired, then left. She walked to the door, watching his back as he traipsed down the stone hallway to the room he would share with Kemnar. There was nobility in belief, even delusional belief. That much she could admit, even admire, though she would never have it herself.
Enjoy your tryst?
Jasnah jumped in startlement. Meridas stood in the shadowed corridor that led to the common room, watching her unseen. He stepped into the light, glancing after Taln, leering slightly.
Tell me, Lady Colin, what is it like bedding a god?
You insult my honor, she hissed.
Oh, come now, Meridas said. You make such claims standing there, your cloak half open, your undergown more flimsy than the wind, your hair mussed from your lovemaking. The entire camp knows how you look at him and he at you. It must be terribly inconvenient not having any tents in which to plan your diversions.
Jasnah pulled her cloak tight, realizing just how much she was revealing, and blushed. She tried to think of a response. What did he mean, how you look at him? She did nothing of the sort. Unfortunately, she realized how things must appear at the moment.
We are people of understanding, Jasnah,
Meridas said, strolling forward.
I care not what you do. I only care for the political union. But do try to keep your relations with our dear Herald a bit more subtle. For the sake of propriety, I will have to claim you were a virgin on our wedding night.
Jasnah thinned her eyes. He claimed he didn't care, but she could tell that he was lying. He was jealous. Very jealous. She could see the anger flash in his eyes when he mentioned Taln, a seething hatred that she finally understood. He assumed she was seeing Taln behind his back, and had assumed it for some time. Meridas was usually so good at hiding his emotions, but she could sense his jealousy even through his uncaring facade. And for some reason, despite what she thought of Meridas, knowing of his jealousy made her feel a little bit more confident. He dispelled that emotion quickly.
Do not forget that you are mine, he said in a low voice. For now, I allow your playing. But when the time comes, when our union is sealed, I will allow no further dalliances. Do not embarrass me, Jasnah.
He was not jealous because he cared for her. He was jealous because he saw another man possessing something that belonged to him.
You disgust me, she whispered. This made him smile.
If you'll excuse me, my lady, I have business to be about. Apparently this town has a proper brothel. I do hope the ladies there are more satisfactory than the tavern whores available in the other villages. Don't worry yourself about gossip. Some of us know how to be discreet.
He turned, ducking into his room, then emerged a moment later and strode down the hallway, obviously enjoying her hateful look. He didn't get far, however, before he was practically shoved aside by a worried Kemnar. Kemnar ignored Meridas's look of indignation, instead rushing to Yasna's door.
"My lady," he said urgently, "we need to get out of this city, now!" "They're about 2 days' march away, my lords and lady," the Galavan soldier explained. "They made a deal with the lords of our city. I carried the messages myself. We're supposed to keep you in the city for 2 days until they can get their forces here to attack you."
Taln looked nonplussed, despite the haste of their preparations for departure. Kemnar had organized the honor guard, and it waited nervously in the street as Yasna and the others left the building. The night air was damp and cool from the high storm, and the stones were still slick. The soldier who spoke was a short, nervous man who bore the beginnings of a bruised face. Natchin was one of the five who had fought Taln at the city gates. He scuttled beside them, speaking in a low voice.
"You have to get out before the lords know you're alerted," he said. "If you can escape the city, I doubt they'll pursue." "If what you say is true,"
Taln asked as they joined the honor guard outside the inn,
"why did the guards turn us away at the gates?"
"The city lords didn't want to appear too eager to let you in," he said. "They knew you had camped for the night and planned to send word to you later."
"And why are you telling me these things?"
Taln asked pointedly. Natchin looked ashamed.
"I'm not right sure, my lord," he admitted. "But, well, I fancy myself one of the best fighters I've ever known. I win 8 out of 10 bouts against serious opponents. I've rarely been beaten as soundly as when I fought you today, and with 4 others. Well, my lord, if you're not a herald, then you're certainly like no other man I've crossed spears with. Besides, what the city lords do just isn't right, and I'll never see any of the coin they get for it."
Taln nodded.
"You believe him?"
Meridas asked quietly. Not with the voice of a challenge, but the voice of one who took threats seriously. Taln paused.
"Dare we not?"
he asked. "Agreed," Meridas said, waving for the honor guard to escort them out of the city.
"You'll have to go with us,"
Taln said to Natchin.
"Do you have family in the village? They will be in danger."
Natchin paled. He might have been a fine warrior as he claimed, but he seemed very new to intrigue.
"You've been seen with us by the innkeeper and anyone passing on the street,"
Taln said.
"They'll know who spoiled their deal. Kemnar, take 4 men and go get his family. Go quickly. We'll wait for you by the gates."
Kemnar nodded, waving for a squad and taking Natchin by the shoulder. The rest of their group made for the city gates, where a group of apprehensive guardsmen barred their exit.
"We can't let anyone out after dark, my lord," the gate leader said,
waving for one of his men to dash off in the direction of the city palace.
"It's against city law."
Taln nodded.
"Send a messenger to the city lords, if you would,"
he said in a civil voice.
"We have just had word of an emergency back at our camp. We need to return immediately."
The captain nodded then, a bit uncertain. He waved for a second man to follow the first, obviously just keeping up pretenses. "Will they attack?" Yasna asked with worry as Taln rejoined their group. He glanced back at the gate guards. There were perhaps a couple 10 sets of them. Not enough to face the honor guard and 2 shard bearers, but perhaps enough to hold the gatehouses until help arrived.
"That depends on whether or not they have orders to kill us,"
Taln said.
"The invaders might want you and Meridas alive."
Thankfully, Kemnar arrived before the messengers returned. He towed a worried-looking woman and 3 children along with the soldier, Natchin. As soon as Taln saw them, he turned to the gate. Without warning or preamble, he whipped out his blade and launched himself at the wood. Three swings flashed in the darkness, then Taln kicked a door-shaped rectangular chunk of wood free from the gate. It thunked down against the stones outside.
"Through,"
Taln ordered, as the gate guards cried out in alarm. Kemnar took position on the other side of their group, holding out his blade threateningly as several soldiers approached. Jasna ducked through the opening in the gate. Outside, she could see movement on the walls. Taln was right. Their escape depended a great deal upon whether or not the townspeople had been given orders to kill. A squad of archers atop the walls would have little trouble picking them off as they escaped. No arrows fell, though Taln walked at the back of the group nervously, blade held at the ready as if to swipe the missiles from the air. Either the city lords didn't respond in time, or they feared Taln's retribution, for no pursuit was given. Jasna didn't relax until they reached camp, however, a few minutes later.
"Break down the camp," Taln commanded. "We leave tonight, you,"
he pointed at Natchin.
"Come with me."
He led the man to Jasna's canopy, where Kemnar prepared their makeshift map of Rimac, drawn from memory by Taln and Kemnar, with help from some of the local mercenaries.
"Where are they camped?"
Taln asked Natchin.
"Here, my lord," the man said, pointing at a place on the map not far from the city. "Or that's where they were when I spoke with them. That was only yesterday. They seemed very rushed to try and catch up with you. They sent riders ahead to the city, but my masters wanted confirmation of their size and your size before choosing sides. I was the one who scouted you both out."
"How many?"
Taln asked.
"Looked like about 1,000, Natchin said. "Mostly on foot, only about 10 riders. Most of the riders were noblemen, though, and only half of them carried swords."
"5 shard bearers,"
Meridas cursed,
"and an entire 10 squad of infantry. They want to capture us badly indeed."
"They must have managed to keep their capture of Ral Aram a secret,"
Taln said,
"and fear will bring troops to warn or to flank."
"They're traveling quickly, my lord," Natchin said. "No wagons at all."
"How do they eat?"
Jasna asked. Natchin shrugged.
"I only know what I see. They didn't even carry sleeping tents."
Outside the canopy, soldiers and people were rousing, and shouts were called as camp was broken down. Jasna understood Taln's consternation. Their own army was ragged, under-equipped, and was accompanied by an increasingly large group of civilians. They could never hope to outrun the larger force, and they certainly couldn't fight it. They would be slaughtered.
"The city?"
Jasna asked.
"Will never let us in now that we've fled," Taln said. "The guards were right, no matter what I claimed. We'd have trouble capturing it, even with 3 blades. Even if we did, the Vaden force has more shard bearers than we. If we can get through the fortifications, then they will have even less trouble following."
"Well, we can't stand here," Meridas said angrily. "We may need to take the lady and escape quickly."
"And leave everyone else to die?"
Jasna asked, horrified.
"They'll leave the army alone, if you're not with it," Meridas said unconvincingly.
Jasna regarded him with a flat expression. "These soldiers belong to the same force that tried to massacre everyone in the palace just to keep word of the attack from escaping. They won't leave a force of 800 troops at their back."
"She's right,"
Taln said. The group fell silent. The map ruffled slightly in Taln's grip, wind blowing through the camp, carrying the sounds of frightened men, many still new to war, barely trained and inexperienced. Jasna breathed in the wet air, trying to think in the darkness.
"Meridas, I'll need my blade back,"
Tarn said, taking out his own weapon and jabbing it into the ground, then knocking the opal free.
You can have it back if I return. That won't be necessary, Meridas said, summoning his own blade.
The implication in his voice was blatant. It wouldn't be necessary because Tarn wouldn't be returning. What? Yasna asked as they exchanged weapons.
Cut east, Tarn said, still speaking to Meridas. The lady has agreed to travel to the holy city, and you might as well start now. Perhaps it will throw them off. Even if it doesn't, there are ruins there. They could provide a defensible position.
Meridas nodded, affixing his old opal to the new blade. The claw grips on the pommel immediately bent back into place, grabbing hold of the new stone, and the metal flowed like liquid, changing into his straight-backed, shorter blade. Tarn? Yasna demanded of him. What are you thinking? Tarn nodded farewell to Kemnar, to Meridas, and finally to her. Then he turned, hefting the shard blade onto his shoulder, and began walking into the night. Yasna dashed over, grabbing him by the arm.
Tarn, this is foolishness, she snapped. One man cannot face 1,000 men, even if that man is you.
One man can slow them, he said. If he attacks at night and in storms, killing lone men.
His eyes were grim. He intended more. He intended something very foolish. He was a madman, with no understanding of his own limitations.
Tarn, I think. Before you say those words, Yasna, he warned. Before you forbid me, think about what you said earlier. You told me that only Alethkar mattered, that you would use me to your ends if it would save your homeland. Even if I buy you only a short amount of time, would it not be worth the chance you might find better ground for defense? Or even reach the holy city and find a way through its oath gate?
Slim hopes, she whispered.
But less slim if I go, he said. You either let me go, or you send back a couple 100 troops to stand and die as a delaying move. You can either sacrifice 200 men or you can sacrifice just one. What will you decide, Yasna Kolin? She who loves Alethkar?
Yasna stood in the cold night, then slowly let her hand slip from his arm. Tarn nodded, then continued walking. She watched him disappear into the darkness, then stood there until Meridas came to get her. The self-satisfied smile in the man's eyes sickened her even more than her own guilt. Kemnar, she said, looking around. As usual, he stood only a short distance away, waiting quietly. Almost unnoticed, upon her needs. Go after him, she said. Watch him, and see what he does. Try and keep him from killing himself. We need him to hold this army together. Assuming it lasts long enough to matter. Kemnar stood for a moment, then nodded in the darkness, face illuminated by one of their few lanterns. He turned, waving to Vinda, second in command of Yasna's guards. Yasna watched with confusion as Kemnar pulled out his shard blade, then knocked the opal free. What are you doing? Yasna asked. Kemnar handed the blade to Vinda.
You're probably going to need that here, he said,
then moved to quickly gather some supplies. Vinda watched Kemnar go, holding the shard blade with awed fingers.
Kemnar, Yasna said with alarm. You are not allowed to get yourself killed. Do you understand? Watch over him, but don't endanger yourself.
Kemnar slung a water bag over his back.
I don't intend to, he said. But I also don't know that I'll be back in time to help defend you. Don't worry. I fully expect to reclaim that blade.
Vinda, don't get too attached to it.
Vinda smiled a toothy grin, gripping the sword with a firm hand.
It'll be waiting for you, he promised.
even if I have to wet it on a bit of Vaden blood."
Kemnar nodded to him, bowed to Jasnah, and jogged off into the night, obviously intent on catching up with Tarn. Meridas's smile only deepened as he watched Kemnar's retreating figure, and Jasnah was forced to confront what she'd just done. Without Tarn, or even Kemnar, to counteract Meridas. Meridas turned to the camp, barking orders without reservation now that Tarn was gone. The Herald's army would have to do without its herald for a time.